So we're in the season of Epiphany, which I always love. The revelation of God, the God made manifest. It's a beautiful time. And it's a complex time always, because always as we begin our year, there's stuff that we carry from the year before that's hard, that hasn't gone away. There's realities in our own individual and collective lives that are difficult. There's suffering and struggling in the world. Darkness, it's often called, but there's God is in the darkness too. There's richness there. So we come to this experience of light, sometimes hauling along an experience of darkness as well, our own loneliness, our own experience of the loss of a relationship or job or God. But Epiphany is a time when we solidify a practice, we make a habit of looking for God made manifest in us and around us and through us and in the world. And so we have stories which help call us to that brightness that each of us brings. In Celtic Christianity, Epiphany stories are called thin places, the places where the boundary between the mundane, the daily events of our lives, and the eternal becomes permeable. I think Inga said last week something about the mundane present or the eternal presence. It's where those two come together, where God parts a curtain and we catch glimpses of God's tenderness, grace, love, justice, majesty, and power. Those moments where for a moment, maybe we connect with someone who's gone before us, or we connect with something deeper and wider. That's what Epiphany calls us to do, is look beneath and beyond the ordinary surfaces of our lives and discover the extraordinary that's there. So when I came in on Friday morning, raring to go, ready to look at all my emails, and I turned my computer on, and Dell was not there, I looked for God around me, and it let me breathe and relax into the day and make some visits and some phone calls and trust that maybe I was called to create something new, but maybe I wasn't, to go into my day. This is what Epiphany is about. It draws us onward beyond Christmas and the birth of the babe, from God in Jesus to God in the world and to God in and through us. So Epiphany says yes to Jesus, but goes beyond Jesus. Now, it wouldn't be an important date in the church if there hadn't been a struggle of life and death over which day we were going to call Epiphany. In the early church, there was especially Constantine, who wanted to have Epiphany, the light, be on the 6th of January to bring in the sun worshipers, you know, who were celebrating the end of darkness and the return of light, the winter solstice. And then there were the other Jesus followers who said, no, we need to jump right to Jesus. Let's forget this light and sun and Epiphany, and let's go right to Jesus and God's light shining in and through Jesus. So you had this conflict, and you have the Council of Nicaea that kind of hammered it into doctrine and dogma. And so some churches today are celebrating the baptism of Christ, and some are celebrating Epiphany, because Jesus is still a babe in the manger. We don't want to go to the grown-up Jesus just yet. The UCC in its wisdom says, you can choose. So today, I chose to stay in the manger and to remember the story that only appears in Matthew's gospel, because there's a lot of richness in that text, which some of which I just discovered and I want to share with you, kind of an epiphany moment for me. So I want to look at Matthew's gospel in particular. We know that Matthew, which we're starting year A, which is the first year of the lectionary cycle, and we'll mainly be reading Matthew throughout the year with a sprinkling of Luke and John. But Matthew's gospel celebrates Jesus' Jewishness. which is really important to say and to notice, because a lot of Christian churches have just wiped his Jewishness out of the story, right? I've met many Christians who've said, he was a Jew? No, I don't think he was a Jew. So in Matthew's gospel, it reiterates the fact that Jesus was Jew many times, and Matthew's gospel repeats Hebrew scriptures and then does midrash or interpretation, elaboration on the story that we find in Hebrew scriptures. So in this morning's passage from Isaiah 60, arise and shine, for your light has come. Well, there's the star, duh. The glory of God is rising upon you. The glory of God is rising upon you, upon you, upon you. Wow. Though darkness still covers the earth and dense clouds enshroud the people, upon you God now dawns. Upon you God now dawns. Upon you, upon me. And God's glory will be seen among you. The nations will come to your light and the leaders to your bright dawn. Lift up your eyes and look around. Don't keep staring at the same thing. Change your perspective. The gospel accounts of the birth narratives are very different. And so this particular story today of the Magi is only in Mark's gospel. Luke's gospel has a lot more information about Jesus' birth, about his conception, about the women that carried, that bore Jesus forward. Particularly, there are women characters in Luke's story that don't appear in Matthew. And Mark doesn't say a thing about the birth of Jesus. Mark goes right to the baptism. It's like, get to good stuff, right? We don't know anything about how this child was raised. But to Matthew and Luke, it was important to have this carefulness and depth of attachment to Judaism and remembering the words of the prophet through storytelling of Jesus. So midrash is, you know, we all do that with our families. We tell stories, and I've talked about that before. It's not that this necessarily happened, although there are historic tags that we can find in the story. The story was built up around those historic tags. So Matthew's community, only Matthew, situates the birth of Jesus in a particular context that I saw for the first time as I was doing research on this text, and I want to talk to you about, first of all, the context of Jesus' birth, as we know, and of this story today, is one of political intrigue. There was temple corruption. There was exploitation of land and labor. There were crushing taxes. Religion was no longer relevant to the reality of people's lives. Does that sound familiar? A lot of people come to this church because they find religion relevant to the lives that you live. It was Kairos time, this time of conflict, but that was pregnant with possibilities. And then there was Roman colonization. There was it says that very little phrase, this was the time of King Herod, which was not a good and happy time, but one of oppression and suffering and injustice. Herod was a brutal and insecure man who was known for his extravagant building enterprises throughout Judah. He was a convert to Judaism. It was convenient. He married his wife. She was Jewish, and he became the Roman puppet king to the Jewish people of Judah. King Herod had a decadent lifestyle. He had numerous wives, one of whom he murdered. He murdered two of his sons. He was ruthless. He left a legacy of a building magnate and a tyrannical rule. Later in Matthew's gospel, just after the passage for today, Herod orders the massacre of the innocents after Jesus' birth. When he can't find the child, he orders all the male children under two be murdered. We don't know if this is historically true, but this is the story that Matthew's gospel tells. Now, according to the text that we read today, the translation is astrologers. But I find the more authentic translation is magi. They probably wouldn't have been kings, because kings wouldn't have come all that way on their own with just a camel. I mean, let's face it. These were nations that Judah would have been worried about coming into their territory. And certainly if they had been Persian kings or Median kings, then then they would have been worried too about entering this territory. So John Pilch, in his Cultural World of Jesus, says that the Magi were probably a caste of very high-ranking political religious advisors to the rulers of the Median and later the Persian empires, which roughly today translates to Iran and Iraq. Ancient writers in those times point out that in Persia, the Magi communicated with the high god of the Persian people on behalf of the great king, whom they also called the King of Kings. Hear that resonance? The King of Kings, and they're going to meet the King of Kings, the King of the Jews. At one point, the Magi actually revolted against the great Persian king and replaced him. They were very powerful. Think Tea Party. They were a political, religious force, the backbone, if you will, of the Persian dynasty. And not that the Persian dynasty was all sweetness and light, because it certainly wasn't. The Magi resisted the imperialistic designs of Philip of Macedonia and Alexander the Great to conquer the Near Eastern people. They hated the Romans and were very against Roman colonization. And the Romans hated the Persians and called them weak. I mean, history repeats itself, right? We hear the echoes in our own day and time. When the Romans begin to dominate the Middle Eastern scene, the Magi increased their support for the Eastern Persian kingship and encouraged resistance against the Western Roman imperialism. So think about today, the East-West conflict, the colossal forces that come together, and Matthew situates the birth of the baby Jesus in the midst of that breach. Imagine that. The Magi had enormous influence on the advisors to the Eastern king, which Matthew would have known about in writing this story. He puts a very political spin on Jesus' story. Known for their centuries of opposition to Western, in this case, Roman imperialism, the Magi come from the East to worship the King of the Jews, the new King of Kings. Now, did they come to collaborate with the new royal family to bring their powers together to defeat Rome? Or did they come as wise ones who truly saw a way that was beyond the powers and principalities in Persia and of the Roman Empire? We don't know. But we have this clash of the titans coming together. These important people, the backbone of Persian power, coming into Judah to the manger to worship and give gifts to the newborn king. Matthew sets Jesus' birth in these tensions between East and West in the midst of centuries of political intrigue and conflict. In Matthew's gospel, Jesus, the Messiah, is born in the breach between rivaling powers of East and West, as surely as Jesus is born there today. Was born Emmanuel, God with us, into the colossal struggles of the rule of the ancient world and our world today. For Matthew to pick the Magi from the East was to set in play a colossal threat to the throne of Roman client King Herod, who seems very much like some of the political leaders in the world today. That they would come seeking the newborn king of the Jews would be an even greater threat. Would they collude with the new royal family to overthrow Roman imperial rule? So we have Herod, that murderous, power-hungry, Roman bootlegging, tyrannical puppet king who had every reason to feel threatened by the Magi. So we have a story of contrast. We have Herod and the Magi who followed a star, who went out of their comfort zone to a new place and a new king. We have Herod and Jesus, the powerful in every way, the builder, the magnate, the insecure, narcissistic leader, corrupt. And we have Jesus, the baby, the most vulnerable of vulnerable populations. The fear of losing his place and power turned Herod into a murderous monster. So much so that when he couldn't find Jesus, he had all the other baby boys in that age group murdered. Take that in, what fear does. Matthew's story continues to play out in the world today. What is more threatening to the vulnerable than a world leader with a fragile ego and a lot of power? This is what fear does. Fear disguises itself in so many ways, as apathy, as greed, as hatred, as persecution, as isolation, as addiction, as control. The list is endless. But in the end, fear is the root of all of it. And while you and I might not be murderous tyrants, I don't think we are, none of us are free from the effects of fear in our lives, right? Inga talked about that a little last week. It keeps us isolated and small and keeps us from knowing and seeing and feeling and living out that brightness that we bring. Matthew's story begs us to consider how fear of losing place and power drives our lives. And it does drive our lives to some degree. How does that fear play out in and through the lives of others? The Magi, if they were afraid, it's not mentioned. They dared to look up and out and beyond their comfort zones, to make a leap of faith, to go, to act, to move, to follow. The Magi are foiled to Herod, who by the most blatant deception and calculated manipulation expresses a desire to go and pay homage to Jesus. Jesus, the tiny, vulnerable newborn whose family took shelter where they could find it, a family that would be forced to leave behind all that they knew and flee Herod's wrath to seek refuge in a foreign country, the country that had enslaved their ancestors. What is the brightness that we bear? What is the brightness that you bear? How was it that Jesus' brightness was honored? He was gifted and Herod's wasn't. How is it, as we prepare our children, that we build some of them up to be open and warm and kind and Christian, and others we teach the God of competition and power over and greed and domination? How are we calling forth the brightness in our children and in each other? When we look up and out beyond our own small self and circles, what is the brightness we see out there that calls us, that leads us forward in this new year? Will we, like the Magi, see and follow and be transformed? Go home by a different way. That is a conversion of heart and mind and spirit. What is the brightness that we bear as church? And today, church council will be meeting to look at our budget for 2017. How are we good stewards of our resources and live into God's dreams for us and the needs of the world around us, which are greater every day? Not a business, but clearly called to have good stewardship. We know that people support mission. And so how will we be the brightness that God bears into the world in the year that comes? I ask you to pray for council today. And of course, we don't make the decisions. You do. All of us, members of the church, on January 29th, will say yes to the budget or not. And then we will live into the dream. We have a special call this year, every year, as we celebrate the birth of the child, as we come to pay homage, as we remember God in and through and around us as individuals, as church, as a nation, as God's people. Which star will we follow? The star of the Herods of the world, or the star of the most vulnerable among us? Amen.